Chapter 6. From the bridge viewport, Pike was staring at the wide blue and white immensity of the planet Tejimos, just as the Scarabus's auxiliary thrusters kicked in, accelerating their plunge into the atmosphere. A new subharmonic became perceptible at the edge of audibility, made clearer by the tense silence.
"Anso," he said, "how's your squawker doing back there?"
"Shouting out loud and clear, Chief. Missiles seem to be taking the bait."
Pike nodded, biting his lip, as he glanced from holoscreen to viewport and back while his fingers worked the touchboard. It was just under 3 minutes since those missiles were launched, and hopes now lay with the AI-controlled forward shielding, which had been configured to maximise heat channeling and dissipation. Meanwhile, the centre section fields had been reshaped into aerofoil forms to augment the ship's flight capabilities. But in entering a planetary atmosphere at this angle and rate of descent, the Scarabus essentially had all the aerodynamics of a falling brick. One part of Pike's holoscreen showed an isometric map of the area around the location of Khor's ship. It was a rudimentary representation, but details were being added all the time as the sensors fed through the updates. Pike's attention, though, was thoroughly focused on the possibility of imminent catastrophe.
"Any other sign that we're being tracked?" he said. Ansel shrugged.
"I was certain that we were invisible back there, yet they detected something. Wait a second. Yes, you little charmer. The squawker has snared the lot. All the missiles are on its tail."
"And looks like those other jacker ships are moving out on intercept courses too," said Pike, grinning as he watched the trails on another holopane.
"Nah, you see what happens when you mess around with a Scarabus crew, eh?"
"Shall I engage deceleration mode, Bran?" said the ship AI.
"Go ahead, Scar. Time we got down to the business that we came here for."
The ship's inertial dampening shielded the crew from the effects of momentum shift, but in his imagination, Pike still felt it as the Scarabus's braking jets howled against the dive, forcing it into a curved trajectory that grew shallower by the second. At the same time, the ship banked to port, its force-field wings flexing with the fierce airflow and carrying it into a spiral descent, which tightened as the airspeed fell.
"Nicely done, Scar," Pike said. "Ansel, what's the latest?"
"Squawker's squawking, heading for open space with the missiles still chasing. No other activity from the jacker ships. Stealth systems are maxed out. We are just ghosting in."
Pike gave a smiling nod.
"Time to pay Khor a visit, I reckon."
The isometric overview of Khor's location was now well detailed. Khor's ship was sitting at one end of a wide wooded valley in a hilly inland region of the largest continent of Tejimos. And it wasn't alone. In a scrubby clearing, a second vessel sat about 100 yards away from Khor's, going by the scale of the picture, and some kind of slender structure was positioned roughly midway between them.
"What is that?" said Ansel.
"Hechek said something about shroud pillars," Pike said. "Kind of implied there was something to do with the planet jacking process. Scar, what do you think?"
"It seems very likely, Bran. In total, there are 4 of these structures placed equidistantly around the planet, all giving off an interesting spectrum of energies."
"The thing is, Chief, who knows when their plan swings into action?"
said Ansel.
"And I don't want to be down there when it starts to happen," Wynne said sharply.
Pike nodded.
"I thought about using the grav loaders to head in there along these defiles, but they give off a very definite energy signature, so we'll need to get in as close as we can and use all of our sneaky skills."
"If I shut down some of the onboard systems," Ansel said, "we could really cut back on the energy profile. Probably have to rely solely on the suspensors for ground-level mobility."
"Bran, there is actually a direct route," said Scar.
our descent will bring us down south of the foothills of a range of steeper rocky hills. Several deep river gullies cut through them to the northern uplands, where the target vessel is located.
Good news, Scar. Didn't much fancy a cross-country hike with nightfall moving in.
On Pike's display, the isometric had pulled back to show the greater locale, and a red dotted line that wove between the hills before doglegging into a high rocky pass. The pass led to wooded slopes overlooking the jackerships and the structure.
Now that's a sweet path for the cunning.
So, what's the timing on this? How long before we can be knocking on their door?
Planet side, my stealth systems still give us an advantage, said Scar. We'll be at the start point in 20 minutes, and the rocky hills will conceal our approach from there on suspensors. It may take between 65 to 75 minutes to reach the entrance to the ravine, and the last section on foot might last up to 45 minutes.
Sounds like a plan, said Ansel. But is it a plan that we like?
The only other option is to charge him from the air, make an attack landing, then engage in a frontal assault on Khor's vessel, Pike said, which I'm pretty sure would get a swift and unfriendly reaction from the other ship. Oh, and lose the element of surprise.
I think I like Scar's plan more than that one, said Ansel.
Well, it is a good plan.
It's a very good plan.
Ansel paused to glance at Dervla.
Don't you think?
Dervla's amused composure was unchanged.
It sounds like a decently cautious scheme. I'm sure that Scar has considered all the risks.
Pike nodded and smiled. Unlike our captain, was the unspoken zinger there, but he decided to pretend that there was nothing out of the ordinary.
OK, Scar, set the course. Ansel, remember what you said about us being like a shadow in the night.
It's all under control, my captain,
Ansel said.
And as soon as our velocity goes subsonic, I'll start using inverted fields to mask our profile.
Pike leaned back in his couch.
Work your magic, laddie.
The final stretch of the descent took almost exactly 20 minutes. Dusk was spreading its grey gloom through the gullies and valleys as the Scarabus followed the planned river route, gliding along on counter-grav energy helices, a vaporous trail of fine spray whirling in its wake. Trees lined the river, their trunks sprouting strange tentacular branches that swayed in the ship's wake, while small creatures on pale, ragged wings fluttered in the encroaching dark. Dervla was capturing data from the main sensor sweep and assembling a basic biosphere flora and fauna list, while Ansel and Mojag were discussing the possible config of another squawker missile. But all that Pike could think about was Khor and his military scanner, and the money and the deaths of Hamadi and Oleg, and how it felt like a deadly personal insult.
So, is that you starting to realise how mad this is?
Dervla's voice was low as she perched on the edge of his console. Pike gave her his best innocent charm smile.
Whatever makes you say that?
She leaned in closer, and a faint flowery fragrance teased his nose.
That faraway look you had, she said.
Just imagining punishments for the thieving scum who played us for suckers, he said. It's a macho payback kind of deal.
She frowned.
I don't think I've seen the vindictive Brannan Pike before.
You make it sound like a bad thing. Look, he lied to us, killed two of our shipmates, and stole our gear and payment. So as far as I'm concerned, he deserves what's coming to him.
Dervla regarded him sadly.
It's still mad, Bran. But we're here, so no point in wailing about it, eh?
This is going to work out diamond fine, he said as she returned to her station. We're going to dance in there, sharp and sly as you like, even the score, get what we're due, then slip out and away. Scar, how's our time doing?
We are ahead of schedule, Bran. ETA is now 21.8 minutes.
Great.
He switched his comm channel to shipwide.
Attention!
We'll be arriving at the debarkation point in 20, and then it's going to be the full encounter team, but one shot, obviously. Everyone be at the loadout store in 10 minutes.
The full encounter team comprised Pike, Dervla, Crefom, Ansel and Wynne, and had included Hamadi, whose aim with the Hexbow had been deadly. Previously, that would have left Punjo, Mojag and Oleg in charge of the ship, a combination which Pike realised Riley was technically unchanged. After his shipwide address, the remaining minutes seemed to fly by. Even so, his impatience got the better of him, so he told Dervla and the others that he needed to get something from his quarters, then left the bridge, heading for the loadout store. Dervla waited until Bran had descended the companionway, putting him out of earshot, then turned to Ansel. "Leaving aside the overall craziness of this plan," she said, "what are our chances of getting through it alive?" Ansel shrugged.
"It's not such a bad plan. The only real flaw is the lack of info on what kind of opposition is waiting for us."
"Yeah," Dervla said. "Just a teeny tiny flaw, that one."
"Which is why I'm bringing along an amped-up multi-sensor I've been working on. Looks like a regular factab, but it's full of surprises."
"Don't forget that surprise and momentum are on our side," said Wynne. "And Cref, of course." She had to admit, the Henkayan was invaluable. Despite his bulk, he was well-versed in battlecraft and fast on his feet. Former Phalanx Sergeant Crefom Graxmer in full-on combat mode was a scary thing. More than once she had thanked the gods of infinite space that he was on their side.
"Attention! All encounter team members to the loadout! Encounter team to the loadout!"
"Time to gear up,"
Ansel said.
"Chief sounds just a bit cranky."
Dervla was the last to drag herself out of her couch and follow. Aft of the hatch, they trooped down the narrow companionway, and before losing sight of the low passage, she caught a glimpse of one of the bearded humanoids watching from the corner of the sickbay corridor. She had intended to ask Pike for the latest on the sick alien, but when they reached the loadout storage, he was clearly in no mood for anything resembling a civilized exchange. Instead, he distributed body armour, weapons, ammo and the harnessed field contingency packs with a terseness that she and Ansel found impossible to ignore, responding with parade ground sirs and yes sirs and snappy salutes. Eventually, Pike could not keep it up, cracked a grin, but still poked her and Ansel's shoulders with his forefingers.
"Any chance you people could start taking this seriously?"
"If someone's shooting at me, my captain," Ansel said, "I can guarantee maximum seriousness."
"Hey," said Wynne, "what if they're shooting at me?"
Ansel shook his head.
"Not when they've got bigger targets to aim at."
"Ha! He's talking about me," said Crefom. "It's always me."
Dervla smiled even as she found herself shifting into that half-relaxed, half-keyed-up mind state that was her now accustomed method of preparing for a mission. Banter and crackery was part of that build-up, and even Bran seemed less of a self-important chump as they headed along the corridors to the main hold. By now, the Scarabus had reached its destination, as helpfully seen on the wall monitor in the hold's control recess. As the main bay doors and fields were macroed into their activation sequence, they looked at the outside scenes on the monitor. They were parked on an area of level ground halfway up a woody slope right next to a gully that led between two craggy hills. The hull cams showed a carpet of split and broken bushes and trees by the light of down-angled external spots, with shadowy shapes in the night beyond.
"Right. Shots first, then night sights," said Pike.
There was a chorus of groans which turned into curses and teeth-gritting expressions as the dermal injector was passed around, delivering booster shots for their immu res. Most of the crew were overdue anyway, Pike explained, not bothering to conceal his glee. While everyone was rubbing itchy patches on their arms, apart from Cref, whose skin was tough as deck carpeting, Pike strapped on his wristcom and muttered into it. The port side bay doors cracked open and slid apart, allowing in a wave of cold air. Bright spots lit up the ground outside, and the ramp, which extruded smoothly, level with the hold deck. As they descended, Ansel sniffed and made approving noises as he unpacked his modified sensor factab.
"Smells like that liqueur they serve on that planetoid in the Kagashir system."
"Planetoid tea, Gredge," said Wynne. "The booze was called Revelator.
Could be the sap from all the trees that the suspensors smashed up," said Dervla, noticing that an exclusion field had snapped into place across the open shuttle bay.
"Okay, my shadow warriors," Pike said. "We'll use the harness lamps till we're clear of the gully on the other side, when we'll switch to the night goggles."
The chest-height lamps had unidirectional heads. Five pale beams winked on and were angled towards the ground. Ansel was about to show round his fat cab, which was displaying a local physical map, when he paused and pointed over at the ship.
"What's Mojag doing here?"
Dervla looked round. Sure enough, there was Mojag hurrying down the ramp and across the layer of broken foliage to where they had gathered.
"What is it?"
said Pike. "What's up?"
"I don't know,"
Mojag said.
"Scar said that you wanted me outside immediately, so I safetied my screens and came running."
"I never..."
Pike began, then raised his wristcom. "Scar? What the hell?"
"This doesn't sound good," Dervla said.
Wynne suddenly shouted,
"Hey, stop! What are you doing?"
At the top of the ramp, three figures stood in the open shuttle bay entrance. Gabrozen Mav and his three followers were carrying a long-limbed form, which they quickly placed at the head of the ramp before stepping back into the bay. Most of the encounter team had already leapt forward in a mad dash, but again the exclusion field reappeared. The motionless form was that of the Agetzi Punjo Bex, and some of the crew went to his side to check on his well-being. Pike, though, leapt over him and slammed his fists against the energy barrier.
"Open this fracking field, you scum-sucking reeker!"
Gabrozen Mav stepped forward, came right up to the shimmering field, and stood about a foot away from the infuriated Pike, his bearded expression grim and unyielding. One hand came up, holding a wristcom, and when he spoke, his voice sounded clearly outside the Scarabus.
"Your ship is mine,"
he said.
"Toolbearer Hetchek has altered its governing intelligence, and it now obeys only me."
"Damn your eyes," Pike growled. "We rescued you, and now you stab us in the back."
"We did not escape to the ruined world where you found us,"
Gabrozen Mav said.
"We were abandoned there, tricked by one that I called brother. With this vessel, I can return to the chains, to the war cage, and undo the damage, if we're not too late."
"Look," Pike said, voice hoarse and trembling. "If you let us back on board, we'll help you get to wherever it is you need to go. Hell, we'll even fight for you."
"My companions would never agree,"
Gabrozen Mav said.
"I was advised to assume control of the ship and dispose of you all before even reaching this place. But that would have been an act of shameful dishonor. I wanted you to have a chance, even if it is only a meager one."
For a moment, Pike said nothing, just stood with his splayed-out hands pressed against the exclusion field. Dervla knew from personal experience what that felt like. The field was a submolecular energy weave, which at first felt tough and spongy to the touch, but it also projected ultrasonic vibrations, which could become intensely uncomfortable.
"I don't give a rancid rat's bowl scraping about your justifications and excuses."
Pike's voice was low and raw and angry.
"The ship is mine! Give it back!"
Gabrozen Mav's gaze was unwavering.
"My need is greater than yours. thousands of lives hang in the balance, and I have to do whatever is necessary to save them.
The bearded warrior stepped back.
Kor's vessel is still there, near the Shroud Pillar. If you hurry, you may reach him before the pillars cast the great net.
The shuttle bay doors began to close, and the ramp too was retracting, which forced Pike to jump down onto the ground. Dervla and the others had carried Punjo Beck several yards away, and as she crouched next to the semi-conscious Igetsi, she saw Pike haul out his heavy caliber sidearm and blaze off a couple of rounds. The exclusion field in front of Gabros and Mav flashed, but he didn't even flinch. Even as the doors closed and sealed, his voice still came through.
I instructed Toolbearer Hetchek to make language teachers for you. If you fail to seize Kor's vessel, your survival may depend on understanding the Omnilect, the tongue of the Warcage. The teachers are in a small pouch secreted in the tall man's inside pocket. We must depart now. I urge you to waste no time in your pursuit of Kor, but I will not lie to you. If the great net is cast and you are trapped on this world, your chances of survival are low.
Counter-grav helices were building beneath the Scarabus, tugging at the grassy undergrowth, making a rushing, tearing noise. Grassy leaves, pieces of foliage and splinters of wood were whipped up, highlighted by the spot beams, into bright, swirling cones of debris. Pike was standing too close, clothes flapping, hair streaming. Dervla yelled at him to get back, but he gave no sign of hearing her, standing there, a mute, still figure. She glanced at the others, saw faces full of stunned disbelief, panic, and the first signs of fear. Wyn Foskell, though, was rifling through Punjo's pockets and produced a small transparent medical pouch, which she passed to Dervla. Inside it were a number of what looked like pale ovoid tablets. She stashed it away in a sealable jerkin pocket just as another shot rang out. Pike had fired on the Scarabus again as it moved away down the valley. In the sudden darkness, harness lamps were hastily switched on, and by their combined luminance, Dervla could see Pike raising the handgun again, sighting along it at the receding ship, a pose he held for a long, drawn-out moment. Then the arm fell limply to his side, hand still holding the weapon. The ship, unaffected, flew away, the halo of its external lights fading, then gone. Despite the cluster of harness lamp glows, the surrounding darkness seemed to deepen, and Pike was swallowed by it. Suddenly, Dervla couldn't see him at all, and was about to call out to him when the small bright beam of a harness lamp winked on, and there he was.
"Ansel," he said, "that sensor of yours working. Do you have a fix on Kor's ship?"
"Within 100 meters," said Ansel.
"When we get to the other side, I'll be able to narrow it down."
"Good. Encounter team goes with me now. We're going to double-time it through the gully, creep up on that scumpot and his goons and hit them hard. Mujag, you and Punjo will have to follow as best you can."
The Igetsi struggled to his feet, aided by Mujag, who was now wearing Wyn's harness.
"I will not hold you back, Captain," Punjo said. "Nor will I be left behind."
"Couldn't ask for more," Pike said.
"Right, let's move."
Dervla frowned as he called out a marching order, then led the way at a jog, closely followed by Ansel, who was consulting his sensor factab as he ran. Then came Kref and Wyn, with Dervla bringing up the rear. Minutes later, they had left Mujag and the limping Punjo behind, and were trudging up a slope of brittle, shin-high bushes to the gully that cut through the hilly ridge. Amid the dark, their wavering lamp beams revealed trees and outcrops, but also attracted odd insects that made a stuttering whine as they circled and darted about. As they all hurried through the shadows, Dervla pondered Pike's behaviour. She was aware, far more than the others, that the gabby, confident exterior masked a few deep insecurities. There was always that aura of unshakable conviction in the rightness of his course, while the rest of the crew tried not to disappoint him. Which didn't help
when his flawed reasoning amplified the flaws of his plans.
But now he's lost his ship, and here we are stuck on a planet that's about to be snatched away, she thought. I've just about had it. When we get out of this and back to something like civilization, I'm chucking it.
Everyone was breathing heavily by the time the team reached the other end of the gully. Carrying weapons and ammo-heavy harnesses, they had splashed through a couple of winding, rocky streamlets, which left most of them with sodden feet. Harness lamps went off, and night goggles were donned as the team skirted across the hillside behind masses of abundant foliage. The slope was heavily wooded, and it didn't take long to find a gap in the greenery which provided a view of the Planetjacker camp. After adjusting her goggle filters, the first thing Dervla saw was a tall, spire-like structure. It was invisible in the darkness, but the goggles revealed the faintly amber energy ripples that were rising from the base to the tapered tip, which had to be about 100 meters high. As the ripples ascended, pale blue points pulsed in spiral patterns. And there were the two ships, located as Ansel said they would be. The large, hulking one sat on the formidable landing gear with four huge thrusters angled groundwards, while a dozen or so biped crew members rushed in and out of a gaping stern bay. A smaller, sleeker vessel sat across the rough clearing, with a couple of humanoid figures moving or sitting close by.
"Small ship is course," muttered Ansel. "Not getting any signs of active sensor sweeps."
"Perimeter trips?" said Pike, still peering through his goggles.
"No energy signatures that I can pick up."
Pike gave a low laugh. "Bastard's wide open. We'll skirt round to attack from the cover furthest from the big ship. We rush them. Close quarters. Try to take them down quick and quiet. Let's go." With Pike in the lead, they headed off under cover of dense bushes, but had taken barely a dozen paces when Ansel spoke up urgently.
"Wait, stop! Chief, they're pulling out!"
Ansel was gripping his factab in both hands, staring at the detailed glows on its oval display. Dervla cursed under her breath, rushed back to where they had paused before, and was in time to see Khor's ship, its port sealed, and the heat signatures of countergrav fields building beneath its hull.
"No, they're not,"
Pike muttered, his voice climbing.
"No, no, no! Thieving scum!"
Before anyone could react, he leapt into the chest-high weave of bush and winding grasses, tore his way through, and charged off down the slope. Everyone seemed frozen with astonishment, until Dervla shouted at them,
"We have to stop him! He'll get himself killed! Gref! Ansel! Go after him! Bottle him up and bring him back here! Oh, and switch on your wrist comms!"
Kref gave a sharp nod and moved off in pursuit. Ansel was still studying the factab sensor readout.
"Other ship is buttoned up too, ready to leave."
He glanced up.
"That's core away."
Above them, a cluster of hull glows driven by a pair of stern thrusters, bright orange dots and smears in the night goggles, rose on a tight curve that turned into a steep climb skywards. When she looked back, Ansel was gone, and Wynn was frowning at Dervla.
"Why'd you keep me back?"
"Someone has to hurry back to meet Mojag and Punjo," she said. "When you find them, let me know, then steer them back to the gully and wait for us."
Wynn took several steps, paused and glanced back.
"Are we going to get off this planet, Dervy?" she said.
"I wish I could say yes or no for definite," Dervla said. "But right now, it's all looking a bit shaky."
Wynn let out a low, dry laugh.
"Shaky! That's good!"
And she was gone. Dervla turned to gaze down slope once more, crossed her arms, and leaned against one of the native trees, feeling the pebbly surface of its bark through the hard weave of her body armour. Had Pike truly lost it, and were the rest now looking to her to be captain? The thought made her shake her head. Captain of what? Exactly. Wynn had been gone just a couple of minutes when a shot rang out in the darkness from the direction of Pike's mad flight. Immediately, she spoke into her wristcom.
"Gref, Ansel, are you okay? Nothing. Only the rustling quiet of the night-sunken trees all around her. She repeated the message in a low, hoarse voice. Again there was no reply. She was about to try a third call-out when red light flared up into the sky, a bright scarlet spear that rushed straight up from the Planet Jacker's spire, impaling the overhead layer of broken cloud. Then the wristcom clicked.
Got him, Javla.
It was Ansel.
On our way.
Copy that, she replied in relief. Still staring at the glowing red beam, she frowned when strange roseate ripples began rippling across the sky above, behind and within the clouds. The ripples pulsed faster till they became a mesh of criss-crossed rosy lines stretching in all directions. Right then, Gabrosan Mav's words came back to her. If the great net is cast, and you are trapped on this world, your chances of survival are low. Footfalls drew near, heavy thuds and the rustle of foliage. Moments later, Ansel came into view, followed by Kref carrying a limp form over one broad shoulder.
That shot was the chief,
Ansel said.
Must have taken it into his head that shooting at that generator spire thing would maybe make a ship come back and land. Then Kref threw a stone and brained him. Hell of a lucky shot.
Lucky,
said Kref, frowning.
Well, it is dark.
Listen, I sent Wynn back to find Punjo and Mojag, Dervla said. We'll be meeting them back at the gully. But Wynn had not yet reported back, so as she led the way back uphill, Derva spoke casually into her wristcom. Wynn, we've got Pike, and we're heading back. What's your situation? It was a long moment before a breathless Wynn responded. Sorry, Dervla. Still looking for them. Teeth gritted, Dervla kept her voice calm. Could be that they were spooked when the sky went mad, she said. Keep searching. Let me know as soon as you see them. Shall do. Say, any ideas about these ripples and lines in the sky? Shook me when that started. Oh, how? What's happening now? Dervla had become aware of the change too. A faint glow that spread from roseate lines, forming a shimmering, unbroken veil that stretched all across the sky. Ansel and Kref with his burden had slowed, their attention likewise caught. Dervla was about to urge them to resume when a pulse of brightness flared like a swift wave from horizon to horizon. The shimmering veil quivered like a membrane struck. There was an awful sense of premonition, while at the other end of the comlink, Wynn was asking, demanding what was happening. Wynn, stay where you are, Dervla said. Wait till this calms down. But no amount of reassurance could have prepared any of them for what happened next. The sky had steadily cleared of clouds, and the glittering patterns and clusters of the stars were visible through the artificial mysterious veil. Low in the sky to the east, a piercing blue point grew and began to put out bizarre tendrils, which themselves bifurcated until there was an ominous blue web hanging out there in space an unguessable distance away. Then the radiating tendril tips began to splay and merge. Strange distortions wavered outwards from the bright azure hub, and for a moment it seemed that space itself was distending. Then came the fastest flickering flash, and in the next instant an entire planet appeared in the sky, its curved vastness looming overhead, so close that Dervla could look straight up and see the details of coastlines and mountain ranges and the snaking meanders of rivers. Wynn Foskell was practically babbling away at the other end of the comlink, while Kref and Ansel, after the expected outbursts of cursing, had regained their composure. Kref had placed Pike down against a smooth boulder, and the erstwhile captain of the Scarabus was gazing skywards open-mouthed. Ansel took out his factab, pointed its onboard sensor nubs upwards to study the unknown world for a moment or two, before lowering it.
It's the same as that planet back in the Nadisha system, he said. Wastelands of destruction, bombed-out population centres. Forests reduced to pockets of vegetation.
He pointed.
See that black smear? That's a city burning.
What do they do that causes all that? Wynne said, privately hoping that she never found out. Ansel was studying the Factab's display again.
That world is enclosed in the same gridded field as this one. Can't be long till the switch.
How will that affect us? He gave a slow, uncertain shrug.
I'm pretty sure they don't want their purloined planets half-wrecked by earthquakes and tidal waves, so I'm guessing that these gridded fields dampen their inertia.
His eyes widened, and he laughed briefly.
Man, the technology required to do all that is astonishing. Well, that's my theory anyway.
Dervla had been opening the comlink to Wynne, and when Ansel finished, she spoke. Did you get that, Wynne? I'm not panicking, and neither should... Got it, Dervla. But I found Mojag and Punjo. That's what I was yelling about. Right. I see. Fine. Are you anywhere near the gully? We're minutes away from it. Dervla glanced over at Pike. He was now sitting there with his head resting on arms that were crossed over raised knees. It might take us a little longer, she said. When you get there...
This is it! Ansel said excitedly. The night's about to go into reverse.
He was right. Staring up at the roseate-tinted sky, she could see the stars starting to slide eastwards with calm purpose. There was a brightening to the west, casting the middle-distant mountain range into black silhouettes and steadily darkening the successive shadowy outlines of the nearer foothills, until the sun rose with a sudden, unfiltered blaze of light that made her flinch and slightly avert her gaze. She looked on in appalled fascination as the retrograde sun climbed with unseeming haste into the sky. An hours-long transit compressed into a few tens of seconds. At the same time, the newly appeared planet was moving in the opposite direction, its ruined immensity held in its own mesh of roseate fields and forces. Off to the side, Wynne Foskell staggered backwards and fell on her backside, and then sat there, staring up. And in her mind, Dervla thought she could almost picture what was happening. Two worlds pivoting around some unshifting point, one swinging out of its eons-old orbit, the other swinging in to take its place. The gargantuan audacity of it was breathtaking to her, even as she recognised the grim peril that they were all in. From this height on the hillside, she could see a landscape revealed, hills and unmarred forests rolling away into the hazy distance. Ansel, one hand shielding his eyes, pointed eastwards.
That's the terminus, he said.
Dervla nodded, seeing the wall of inky shadow now racing westwards. The other planet was moving between them and the sun, and the nightfall of an eclipse was sweeping relentlessly in their direction. Then, suddenly, it was upon them, the sun sliding behind the ruined planet's obscuring edge, the curtain of darkness, the plunge into gloom. Someone moaned, Pike perhaps, and harness lamps were switched on again. Dervla realised that she had been holding her breath and let it out in a shaky sigh. How long? She said.
A minute at the most, said Ansel.
They've moved this planet out of its orbit, haven't they?
Without a doubt.
When the other has taken its place, she said, what happens next?
Ansel laughed nervously.
Well, Gabros and Mav told the chief a neat little story about newly stolen worlds being taken to some far-off empire, but who knows how much of that is true. If I had to guess, I'd say that the next step is where we get whisked off into hyperspace. My God, it's staggering, this. Flipping whole planets in and out of hyperspace. Ah, dawn rises once again.
As the eclipse drew to a close, the gloomy dark was swept away by an onrush of daylight as the vast, ravaged planet sailed along its inexorable course. But we can't just wait here in the open like dumb prey,
she thought. No way of knowing what happens to these hijacked worlds. So we should act as if the worst is heading our way. It didn't take much to persuade Kref and Ansel to get moving again. Pike refused Kref's offer of being carried, hardly saying a word as he forced himself to his feet and began trudging upslope. Progress was slow, and as they climbed, Dervla began to realise that the sun, now a thumb's width above the eastern horizon, had not moved for several minutes. She was about to mention it to Ansel when there was a shout from further uphill. It was Wynne waving at her from between large clumps of prickly bushes, and Mojag and Punjo at her back. "Did I not tell you to wait for us at the gully?" Dervla said. Wynne glanced at Mojag and Punjo, then shrugged. "We were getting back from where I found them. Spotted you through the bushes and here we are," she gave a bleak smile. "Bit of a hellish stew that we're in, eh?"
"Dervla,"
Ansel said sharply. She had seen the change already in the way shadows were moving too quickly across the ground. Turning, she saw the sun climbing into the sky again, getting close to its noon high point before curving southwards. Its progress seemed to accelerate as it rushed overhead and fell beyond the horizon, plunging all into funereal darkness. There was a muttered cursing as lamps were fumbled on. Someone coughed. Someone muttered angrily in a language Dervla didn't know, and someone hushed them. She wished she knew how to calm fears with easy words and a chuckle, something Pike was adept at. All she could do was urge them to stay together and carry on up the hill, so, stumbling in the dark, they did so. The fear that still made her chest feel hollow spiked a few minutes later when the roseate sky above quivered suddenly. The bright, starry points started to blur against the inkiness of space, gleams and clusters smearing into trails that faded as a maelstrom of steel greys and razor silverness swirled out to span the sky.
That's hyperspace,
Mojag cried out.
How is that possible?
And Dervla recalled what Pike had said he was told by the alien toolbearer Hechek about the Shuskar and their huge ship, Kizudra. If it was true that they were bound for some distant savage star empire, then this planet could be in transit for days. When she relayed this conclusion to the rest of the crew, their consternation was undisguised. "We only have rations for 2 days," Wynne said, "three at a push. Hey, what about checking the landing site near that spire structure? Maybe the Jackers left some supplies behind."
"What about attacking? Firing at the spire?"
said Mojag, whose drawn features gleamed with sweat while nervous fingers pawed at his scalp.
"Knocking out that energy field would bring rescuers running."
Ansel was looking at him as if he was mad.
"Yeah. And then the entire planet drops out of hyperspace, and we freeze to death in the black emptiness of interstellar space. Is that what you had in mind?"
Mojag bowed his head and covered his face with his hand.
"No, you're right. You're right. Don't you see?"
"Look," Dervla said, "we have to keep our cool. If we're going to be trapped under this sky for a while, we either stay put or head for the nearest settlement."
"That's a good 15 clicks east and north of here," said Ansel.
She shrugged. "Anyone feel like sitting down and just hoping for the best? Nah, didn't think so." Moments later, packs were reclipped to harnesses, and the crew resumed hiking up the bushy slope. Pike was stumbling along, flanked by Wynne and Ansel, and shaking off helping hands whenever they were offered. Kref led the way, and Dervla brought up the rear, walking in Mojag and Punjo's footsteps. It now seemed that the Agetzi had gone from being the recipient of assistance to its donor, as he tried to calm or reassure the increasingly fretful Mojag. "This situation is crazy," she thought. "Pike's turned into a lethargic basket case, and Mojag's having a gradual meltdown. no doubt caused by the copy of Oleg that he has in his head. And everyone's looking to me for leadership. Damnation, we are in trouble.
Something new is happening.
Ansel had slowed and was looking up. The sky was changing again. The churning greys and silver stria of hyperspace were melting into each other, the vast eddies and swirls flattening, the entire convulsive embrace of it darkening deeper and darker, and suddenly the wide blackness of space snapped back in, scatters of stars clearly visible through the rosy veil.
How long was that? Dervla said. 20 minutes? 25?
Ansel was checking his fact tab.
23 and 4 seconds.
That's only long enough for a jump of about 15 light-years, she said. Can this be the destination?
The stars began to slide sideways, as if the planet was being turned. At the same time, something swung smoothly up from the horizon to loom vastly into view. At first glance, Dervla thought she was seeing at an angle a widely separated formation of ships, huge ships, set out in a perfect grid array that curved oddly away. Then a bright radiance bloomed on the western horizon, and the array of distant objects shone as its relative position began to change. Dervla gazed from array to horizon and back, trying to take it all in. The planet was being steered towards the curved array of bright round objects, moved level with it, positioned, and realization struck.
Those are worlds, she said.
Oh, that's amazing. Everybody else was staring too.
There must be scores, said Wynne.
And we're being fitted into an empty slot, Dervla said. Surveying the incredible sight, she counted 9 rows in the array, then made a rough estimate of the worlds visible along one of them, then tried to reckon how many were strung along each encircling chain. Then added them up.
About 250, she said.
More like 290, actually, said Pike. Maybe 300.
At the sound of his voice, she whirled to see him standing next to Ansel, switching between glancing down at the Factab's oval display and peering up at the grid of worlds now half filling the sky.
You sound okay, she said, suspicion fueling a growing irritation. Got over that little tantrum, did we? Have you been faking it all this time? I'll bet you have, you
faking!
I'll have you know that I was distraught, beside myself with sheer unmitigated anguish at the way they stole my ship. Well, not so much anguish as a right steaming fury. Yes, I did kinda lose it. Really felt like I was blowing my top after seeing all our plans fall apart. So I went off on a wee rampage and was going to hand over my guns until Kref decked me.
So you've been back to your normal egomaniacal self since you came round, Dervla said. Back down there. And did you enjoy seeing us worrying ourselves sick over you? Pike sighed.
Everyone did their job, Dervla. And that was in no small part due to yourself.
I've always wanted to see how you'd manage under pressure, and then this opportunity presented itself. It was too good to pass up. So, now that you've had a taste of command, you have an idea of what it's about, you know, if another job offer comes your way, like.
You let me think you were having a breakdown or something.
She paused as Pike arched an eyebrow and glanced over at Mojag, who was standing off to one side, hands linked behind his head as he muttered to himself. Mojag was a friend and crewmate, and it was disturbing to see him in this state. But it didn't lessen Dervla's resentment at Pike's fakery. Then she stopped and wondered, was this the fakery? Was this just a desperate piece of face-saving, something to avoid the embarrassment of admitting that he had lost it? She inhaled deeply, exhaled, and forced herself into something like composure.
In the circumstances, Captain, she said, we had better get focused on survival.
Could be that the new owners will be along shortly to check out their new property. Pike nodded, glancing once more at Ansel's factab. Some big damn pretty thing, this artificial solar system, eh? I mean, what kind of tech would you need to hold all these worlds in place? Ansel lightly prodded several display emblems.
Well, Chief, they are capable of taking one of these planets, bundling it up in an inertia-dampening field, flying it through hyperspace, swabbing it for a fresh one, and bringing it back. My guess is they're pretty far up the pecking order.
He gave Pike a sidelong look and grin.
Good to see you back in the game, by the way.
Yes, Dervla thought. The boy's game. Above and outwith, one final gentle gyring motion seemed to lock the world in place and left their surroundings in darkness once more. Overhead, the roseate veil abruptly vanished, even as the early grey fingers of another daybreak spread slowly from the west. It was dawn on an unknown world, and all the other worlds that Dervla could see curving away in perfect regimentation. Right now, just give me one without Pike on it and I'll be the happiest girl alive.